duties. In this series on the significance of Radha Krishna Bhakti in Kali Yuga, we've been covering some of the main points of our scriptures of Sanatan Dharma. I explained to you the aim of life. Although souls have so many desires, but there's only one original desire, and that is the desire for perfect happiness. The desire for perfect happiness exists within every soul because every soul is ansh of Bhagwan, and Bhagwan himself is perfect happiness. He is divine happiness, unlimited happiness. And it's that happiness that every soul wants. That's our initial desire. We only have an opportunity to attain God while in a human body. We can actually be born in any of the other species of living beings. 8.4 million different life forms described by our scriptures into which a soul can enter. We have been born in all of those life forms, and we can be again. We've received unlimited human births as well, because we're eternal. But only while we're born as a human do we get a chance to attain God. Only humans get to perform karma. Other beings, they're simply undergoing the consequences of what they did the last time they were human. So, this life is a chance to attain God. However, God cannot be known through the means that we're used to attaining things in this world. In other words, through our own effort, through our power of intelligence, through our physical strength, through our determination. God cannot be attained by any of these means, because whatever effort we're going to make, it will be a limited effort, and God is unlimited. Whatever thoughts we can have will all be material, because our mind is material, but God is divine. Whatever meditation we do will all be material, because our mind is material, and God is divine. Whatever we see, smell, hear, taste, or touch is all material, because our senses are material. But God is divine, so he can't be perceived with material senses. He can't be understood with a material mind. In order to know God, you need to get a divine mind. In order to experience God, you need to get divine senses. How do you get a divine mind or divine senses? Through God's grace. God graces and you receive. How do you receive God's grace? By surrendering to him. Any soul who surrenders, God graces, they receive divine mind and senses, and they know God and they experience God. What is it that has to be surrendered? It's our mind. Our man must be surrendered to God. However, at this point we ran into a problem, because the mind is already surrendered to the world. In other words, it's fully attached in the world. So we had to understand, why is it attached in the world? Because if it's 100% attached in the world, how is it going to become 100% attached to God? God realization happens when we become 100% attached. So we only have one mind. We can't have it 100% attached in two places at the same time. So we understood the process of attachment. How does it happen? Since we have this innate desire for happiness, which is initially the desire for God, but we have a material mind and senses, which are made of Maya, and the world around us is also made of Maya, so we can perceive this world with our current senses and mind, but we can't perceive God. That's reason number one. Reason number two is, since the world is made of Maya and our senses and mind are made of Maya, thus they are sajatiya. So there's a natural attraction of the mind towards the world, just like there's a natural attraction of your soul towards God, because they are sajatiya. So because of this, the mind feels this restlessness, which is the urge to find divine happiness. But since it knows nothing about God and cannot perceive God, thus it tries to find that happiness in the world. It's very natural. Whenever we target something in this world as a potential source of happiness, we tend to keep thinking about it. Could be a thing, could be a person. The more we think about it, the more we become attached. This attachment leads to further desire of that object. And then we also get a kind of illusory happiness. Illusory because the happiness we experience from those things, it's not because there's actually happiness in that thing. It's because we're attached to that thing. We have a desire for it. Thus, when we receive it, we get an excitement in our mind equal to the amount of desire that we have, which is equal to the amount of attachment that we have for that thing. So it's a self-created experience of happiness. Like, I'm having trouble concentrating right now giving this speech because I saw someone brought a vegetarian cake to celebrate someone's birthday downstairs. So my mind keeps going to that cake. Oh, that's going to taste so good. It's been so long since I had cake. So when we eat that cake and we feel that excitement, why are we getting that excitement? Because we've thought, oh, there's happiness in this cake. There's happiness in chocolate or whatever kind of cake it is. There's happiness in sugar. Is there actually happiness in the cake? No. Because each of us is going to experience a different amount of happiness from the very same cake. Whereas if there was actual happiness in the cake, we should all get the same amount of happiness. Like if you measure the amount of calories in a piece of cake, it's going to be the same for everyone. But if you measure the amount of happiness, it's going to differ. Because it's not actually there, it's in your own mind. It's a self-created experience. So for this reason, it's called illusion. The world is not an illusion. The happiness we experience in the world is an illusion. Plus, the more we go on eating cake, like if I say, okay, let's cut the cake in half. It's like this big cake. Let's cut the cake in half. I'll take half and you all can split the rest. So, as I eat that cake, the first piece of cake might give me the maximum amount of happiness, but then the second piece will be less, third piece will be less. By the time I'm finished eating my whole half of the cake, I'll be sick and tired of eating cake. That cake won't be giving me any more happiness if I go on eating it. So, this is also why we call it the illusion of happiness. It was there and then it's gone. If there's real happiness in the cake, I should be able to go on eating the same cake for hours and hours or forever and keep getting the same amount of happiness. But I don't. So it's just the illusion of happiness. It's the same with every pleasure of this world. It's all of this same type. I explained this to you so that by understanding that, you could detach your mind from such worldly pleasures, not simply for the sake of renouncing the world. There's no value in and of itself in simply renouncing something physically. I told you this so that you could release your attachment on the world, thus your mind becomes free to attach it to God. So you understand both sides. God is perfect happiness. I can get real happiness from Him that lasts forever. It's not the illusion of happiness. It's real happiness. So you understand that side, but you also need to understand, but what about the happiness of this world? So I explained that to you. That it's an illusory happiness, and understanding this, we can gradually move our mind from those worldly pleasures towards the desire for Krishna. To help us with this, we also understood that we need the help of a guru. Who is a guru? A guru is a saint, a Mahapurush. And what is a Mahapurush? One who has attained God. So the soul who has attained God, whom you accept as your spiritual guide, becomes your guru. And the guru helps the souls by explaining all of the tattva jnana, as well as explaining the path to God. Behind the scenes, the guru also graces us internally as we follow the path to God, helps to diminish the effect of our bad sanskars, and in the end, graces us with God realization and freedom from Maya. Thus, it is through the guru's grace that a soul meets God. Or God's grace that enables a soul to attain Him comes to us through the guru. Now we need to understand about the practical path. The Vedas, which are the source of all spiritual knowledge, have three main parts: Karmakand, Gyankand, Upasanakand. Actually, Veda is very extensive. Lakchantu chaturo Veda, lakchamekam tu Bharatam. Veda itself says there are originally 1 lakh mantra in the Vedas. 100,000 mantras. And there's also 100,000 shlok in the Mahabharata. That's what this mantra said. All of those mantras are divided into 4 Ved. Rigved, Samved, Yajurved, Atharvaved. And out of all the mantras in each of those 4 Vedas, they're also further divided into branches. So you have originally 21 branches of Rigveda, 1,000 branches of Samved, 50 branches of Atharvaved, and 109 branches of Yajurveda. It adds up to 1,180 branches of the 4 Vedas put together. So 100,000 richas, 1,180 branches of the 4 Vedas. Now these branches are further subdivided. If you take each individual branch, they're divided into 3 parts. Mantra bhag, Brahmana bhag, Aranyak bhag. In mantra bhag, the mantras for use in Vedic rituals are told. In Brahmana bhag, how to use the mantras told in mantra bhag is revealed. And in Aranyak bhag, the higher spiritual knowledge is revealed, not just rituals. In that Aranyak bhag, there's a section called Upanishad. For instance, in the Taittiriya Shakha of Krishna Yajurved. So that Krishna Yajurved, Yajurved itself has 109 shakha branches. One of those shakha is called Taittiriya Shakha. Now Taittiriya Shakha has the Mantra Bhag, Brahmana Bhag, and Aranyak Bhag. The Aranyak Bhag has 10 chapters. Out of those 10 chapters in the Aranyak Bhag, chapter 7, 8, and 9 is called Taittiriya Upanishad. So you see, that highest knowledge of that shakha is in those three chapters. Thus, it's called Upanishad. Taittiriya Upanishad. It's a conversation between two divine personalities, Varun and Bhrigu. Varun, the father, and Bhrigu, the son. Both eternal divine personalities. So just like this, every one of the branches of the Vedas has a part which is called an Upanishad. Thus, since there are 1,180 branches of the four Vedas, there are originally 1,180 Upanishads. Out of those, a little more than 200 are available today. But out of all of that, in Muktika Upanishad, there's a description of the 108 most important Upanishads that contain the essence of all the Upanishadic knowledge. Out of those 108, imagine, out of 1,180, there are 108 that contain the essence of the knowledge of the Upanishads. Out of those 108, every one of them is available today. And out of those 108, 9 are considered to be most important. When you listen to the lectures of Jagadguru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj, you'll notice that he quotes most often from certain Upanishads like Shvetashvatra Upanishad, Kena Upanishad, Katha Upanishad, Mundaka Upanishad. These are part of that. Those 9 most important Upanishads. Of course, he quotes from many dozens and hundreds more. But I'm just giving you a basic idea about Vedas and Upanishads. Now, this total body of knowledge of the Vedas, out of that, all that knowledge is divided into 3 topics, you can say. Karmakand, meaning the path of karma, the path of good actions, and all the knowledge you need for following the path of karma. Then you have Gyan Kand, and you have Upasana Kand. Thus, we have 3 paths to God. According to the sections of the Vedas, we have the path of karma, the path of Gyan, and the path of bhakti. Shri Krishna says the same thing in the Bhagavatam to Uddhava. Yogastrayo maya prokta nirnam shreyo vidhitsaya jnanam karma cha bhaktischa no payo nyosti kutrachit. He says there are only 3 upai, 3 means of attaining me, God. There is no 4th upai. Jnanam, karma, cha bhakti. Jnan, karma, and bhakti. No payonyosti kutrachit. There is no other way, only these 3 ways. The path of good actions, the path of knowledge, and the path of devotion. Karma, jnan, and bhakti. Why are there only 3? You would think that we've existed since eternity. Someone would have invented a 4th way or a 5th way to attain God by now. No, there's a reason. Bhagwan is Sat Chit Anand, and we are Ansh of Sat Chit Anand Brahm. So we also have these 3 qualities, Sat Chit Anand. Thus, the means for a soul to attain God is also 3. Sat relates to the path of karma, chit relates to the path of jnana, and anand relates to the path of bhakti. We're going to start by looking at the path of karma. We'll look at each of these paths in turn, because you can't follow all 3 paths at once. You have to determine which path is the best one for me to follow. Which path is the most likely to be successful in my quest to attain God in this life? So out of all those mantras of the Vedas, 100,000, fully 80,000 have to do with karmakand, this path of good actions. And the Ved says, kurvanneveha karmani jijivishecha tagvam samah. Ishavasya Upanishad says, you should spend your whole life doing good actions, following the injunctions of the Vedas, the do's and don'ts, what we call vidhi and nishedh. Doing all kinds of good actions. Live for 100 years doing that. And this is what Ved says. Satyam vada dharmam chara. Chandogya Upanishad. Tell the truth and follow the dharma. This path of karma, it's also called the path of dharma. You can say karma dharma. So Ved is saying we must follow this path. Shruti smriti mamaivagye yasto ullanghya vartate badhul smriti. Bhagwan himself is saying, the do's and don'ts of the Vedas are my agya, and the one who follows it is dear to me. The one who does ullanghan, who doesn't follow the rules that I've laid down in the Vedas, he is dveshi. He's my enemy. Very strong words. Gita says, yagya dana tapah karma natyajyam karyam eva tat. Shri Krishna says, yagya, this is a Vedic ritual, Vedic fire ceremony, which is part of the path of karma. Dan, giving charity, is a big part of the path of karma. Tap, doing austerities. Karma, doing all the good actions. Shri Krishna says these are all prescribed by the Vedas. You have to do them. It's your kartavya. It's your duty to perform all these good actions prescribed by the Vedas. Sve sve karmanya bhirata sansiddhim labhate nara. Gita. By performing one's dharma, by observing one's duty as prescribed by the Vedas, one attains perfection. Thus, one should never abandon their duties. One should always observe the good actions told by the Vedas. So, the path of karma must be followed. However, if you go in the same scriptures that I just quoted from, you can also find the exact opposite statements. I'll take you into Ishavasya Upanishad again, the one that was saying, kurvanneveha karmani jijivishecha tagvam samah, live for 100 years, following all the good karma of the Vedas. It turns around and says, andhan tamah pravishanti ye vidyamupasate tato bhuya ivate tamo ya ugvam ratah. In other words, the one who follows the path of karma enters into darkness. The one who follows all the do's and don'ts of the Vedas enters into darkness. Kathopanishad says, avidyaya mantare vartamana panditam manyamana dandramyamana pariyanti mudha andheniya naiva manaya thandha. The one who follows this path of karma is like a blind person being led by another blind person. He's never going to reach his goal. He's doing it out of ignorance, avidya. He's naive to follow this path of karma. Mundaka Upanishad, another part of the Vedas, says, Ishtapurtam manyamana varishtam nanyachreyo vedayante pramudha nakasya prishthete sukrite nubhutve mam lokam hinataram vavishanti. Now the language is getting even stronger. Ved was saying, Kathopanishad is saying, if you follow the path of karma, it's out of ignorance. And you're like the blind being led by the blind. Now Ved is saying, the one who follows the path of karma is pramur. It means an extremely foolish person. An idiot, you could say. Such name-calling in the Vedas for the one who follows the path laid out by the Vedas. Why? Parikshya lokan karmachitan brahmano nirvedamayan nastya krita kritena Mundaka Upanishad. Because people have actually tested what results do you get by following the path, this path of the Vedas, the path of karma, as described in the Vedas. And they found that there's no perfect happiness attainable. Because the highest you can get by following that is to go to Swarg, and you only stay there for a limited time. The happiness over there is also limited and material. And in the end, you come back here, not even necessarily in a human body. Hinataram vavishanti. You may be sent into a lower birth in one of the lower species. Even Gita, after telling us never to leave those good actions prescribed by the Vedas, turns around and says, Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschita vedavadarata parth nanyadastiti vadinah. In other words, the one who follows the path of karma in order to go to swarg is a fool. In the Bhagavatam also, Uddhavji asks Shri Krishna, Vadanti Krishna Shreyansi Bahuni Brahma Vadina Tesham Vikalpa Pradhanya Mutaho Ekamukhyata. Shri Krishna, there are so many different paths told by our scriptures and by all the saints, although all of those paths can be categorized into three, karma, jnana, and bhakti, yet even within that there are many sub-paths. He says, out of all those paths, which one is correct? And why are there so many paths? Shri Krishna answered, Kalena nashta pralaye vaniyam veda sangita adau brahmane prokta dharmo yasyam madatmaka. Uddhav, I reveal the dharma in the Vedas. What is that dharma really for? Yasyam madatmakah. Through that dharma, a soul is supposed to reach me. Because the ultimate goal of a soul is to reach God. So I put that knowledge in the Vedas. Over time, the Vedas may be lost. Because they're kept in a book form in this world, so books don't last forever. And when there's a pralay, obviously, nothing survives that. So when Srishti begins again, I have to produce the Vedas in the world. So I give that knowledge to Brahma. Brahma, in his divine mind, through Shri Krishna's grace, receives the Vedas in a subtle form. then he makes it available in the world through the first rishis, mantra drashta rishis. Once they make it available in the world in a written form, then anyone can get their hands on it. Any qualified or unqualified person. Who is qualified to read, interpret, and understand the Vedas? Only a divine personality. Only one with a divine mind. Just like you need a divine mind to understand God, well, guess what? Vedo Narayana Sakchat. Bhagavatam says, Ved is Sakchat Bhagwan. Ved is another form of God. So just like you can't understand God with a material mind, you can't understand Ved with a material mind either. But once it's made available in the world in a written form, all kinds of people can get their hands on it. Tamas people, Rajas people, Sattvic people. And according to their own mind, they interpret, or should I say misinterpret, the Vedas. Yatha prakriti sarvesham chitra vacha sravantihi, Shri Krishna says further ahead in the Bhagavatam, that people interpret according to their own intellect. So tamas people give a tamas interpretation, rajas people give a rajas interpretation, sattvic people give a sattvic interpretation, and all three are wrong. Because only one with a divine mind, beyond sattvarajtam, could give the correct interpretation of the Vedas, which is why you have to learn Vedas or any scripture or any spiritual philosophy from a true spiritual master, the God-realized saint. So Shri Krishna says, once people start interpreting all these verses of the Vedas in their own way, so a lot of different paths can spring up just out of that alone. In addition to that, people make up their own paths, their own traditions. There are many things that people follow nowadays, they don't know. Where did it come from? Is it written in any scripture? Well, they learn from their parents, who learn from their parents. But show me in the original scripture, where is it written to do that thing? For instance, you might know someone who doesn't celebrate Janmashtami or Ram Naomi or some auspicious festival like that. Why don't you celebrate it? Because my great-great-grandfather died on Janmashtami. So now we consider Janmashtami to be inauspicious. In other words, they're afraid if they celebrate Janmashtami, another family member will die. Well, first of all, everybody has to die. So whether you celebrate Janmashtami or not, every person in your family is going to die eventually. Everyone who comes to this world has to leave this world. Jatasya hi dhruvam mrityur. Gita says, whoever is born must die. And of course, they are reborn. Mritam janma mritasya cha, dhruvam janma mritasya cha. And if you think about it, there are only so many days in a year, 365 days in a year. There's probably at least one or two Hindu festivals that are celebrated on every single day out of 365 days. And you have existed since eternity, but let's just say for the life of this earth planet, or until since the current civilization began in this Manvantar, you would have had hundreds and thousands of ancestors, relatives. So many of them that probably you would have had several ancestors die on every single day of the year. Which means you would have had ancestors die on Janmashtami, on Ram Naomi, on Diwali, on Holi. So by this logic, we should not celebrate any festivals because they're all inauspicious because people have died on all of those days. Yet, there are people who don't celebrate something like Janmashtami for such a reason because it's become a tradition in their family. So Sri Krishna actually says, some things spring up like that, like a parampara that someone started. It wasn't based on any authentic spiritual teaching or scriptural teaching. Just someone started it and people started following, and up until today, people are still following. Then you have other people who started paths through their interpretation of the Vedas, and those have been followed for decades or hundreds or even thousands of years. Shri Krishna goes on, dharma me ke yashaschanye kamam satyam damam shamam. He names some of the paths that people consider to be supreme. Dharma. So, like we were saying, someone should follow all the injunctions of the Vedas. Yash. Another person says, no, no, no. The best thing you can do, because you're going to die, and when you're gone, everything of yours is gone. None of it remains yours. But one thing stays behind. Your name, your fame. In this world, people will still remember your name or the things you did after you left. So, some people say yash is the main goal. Try to become, get a big name, become famous, because that stays behind after you're gone. Someone else says, no, no, no. Kaam, desire, worldly desire. Just try to satisfy all of your desires in this life. Why? Yavat jivet sukham jivet rinam ghritva rinam kritva ghritam pivet bhasmi bhutasya dehasya punaragamanankuta. Charvak says, because you are the body, there's no soul. When you die, you're the body. So when your body dies, you're finished. This is Charvak Siddhant. It's against the philosophy of Vedas, but some people believe that. So since you're done when your body dies, when you actually die, so what's the use of worrying about what's going to happen to you in your next life? Oh, I'll be punished for bad actions. Who cares? There's no next life. Do what you have to enjoy this life. Beg, borrow, and steal. But enjoy this life to the fullest. Someone else says, no, no, no. Satyam. Satyam vada. Tell the truth in every situation. Some people say this is the supreme ideal. But can you tell the truth in every situation? If you actually spoke what you were thinking every moment of every day, you might not have any friends left. We don't have that much control over our thoughts. The wife is sitting and thinking something against her husband. She's not going to say it. She's just thinking it. Husband says, what are you thinking of? Oh, nothing. Just thinking about the kids or something. She makes something up. Imagine if she said what was in her mind. One time a shopkeeper scolded his son that you never go and listen to the katha. You never go to the mandir. There's always some good Babaji's coming. Go and listen to their speeches. You'll learn something. So the son listened to his father. And the next day he went to the mandir and he listened. Panditji was telling the katha of Harishchandra. That tells you, you know, truthfulness is the highest ideal. You have to follow that. So he listened and he took it to heart. And the next day in the store where he helped his father, he was telling everybody, okay, this is our retail price. This is what we're selling it for, but this is our cost. So that's our profit margin. We've hiked the price up by that much. He's revealing everything to every customer. So his father was watching. And, you know, he was getting steamed watching this the whole day. He couldn't understand, what is my son doing? So when they got home at the end of the day, ek jhapad lagaya. What are you doing? You're trying to put us out of business? We'll go bankrupt if you keep up with that. And he said, Father, I went to the katha like you told me to, and it was the Harishchandra katha. So I decided I should be truthful with everybody. He said, oh, see, there's one thing I didn't tell you. Katha sunne ki akal bhi chahiye, zaruri hai. How to listen. There's a specific, it's like a kala. You have to have this skill of how to listen. What's that, Papa? See, when the speaker is speaking, whatever he's saying, you just hold out your shirt like that, and like all the good things. You just, ajao, 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 you collect it all here, everything he's saying. And then when he's done, and it's time to go, you just get up and do that. So you listen to everything. Don't take anything in your heart. Don't change in any way. But anyway, some people say that satya is, that's the highest thing. Someone else says, no, no, no. Dham and sham. Dham means control over your senses. Be austere. Do not allow yourself to enjoy anything. Sham, control over your mind. Shri Krishna goes on. See, he's telling all the paths that people try to follow. Anye vadanti swartham va aishwaryam tyaga bhojanam. He says, some people say swarth, just fulfill your own self-interest. Don't worry for anyone else. Let them worry for their self. You try to make yourself happy. Aishwaryam, try to gain power and wealth and influence in this world. That's how you'll find happiness. Someone else says, no, 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 tyag. Give up everything. Get rid of your possessions. Don't own anything. Renounce everything. That's the path to happiness. Someone else says, bhojanam. Try to enjoy the world through your five senses, but especially bhojanam, by eating. Eat more, eat good, tasty food. That's how you'll find happiness. He goes on. Kechid yagyatapodanam vratani niyaman niyaman. Yagya, by performing Vedic fire ceremonies, yagya, you'll attain happiness. Tap, by doing austerities, you'll attain happiness. You see so many different people saying so many different things. Someone else says dan, by doing charity, you'll attain happiness. Someone else says vrat, by doing religious fasting, you'll attain the ultimate. Many people fast religiously, meaning for certain reasons. Like on one, maybe on one day they won't eat grains, but they're still allowed to eat sugar. I know someone who told me he was doing a vrat one day, and in that vrat, I think you weren't allowed to eat like rice, dal, that kind of thing. But you could eat mitai. So he went to the mitai ki dukan and ate like 60 rasgulla. But his vrat was maintained. So, some people do a lot of fasting, but the fasting is not always the best thing for your health if you do it in that way. Niyam, yam, described in Yoga Darshan, different things that have to be observed or avoided. Anyway, there's so many different paths described in our scriptures. And you know what Shri Krishna says? All of those I just mentioned to you, sab ke sab galat. Adyantavanta evaisham loka karma vinirmita. Dukho darkastamo nishtha chudrananda shucharpita. He says all of these give a temporary result. Adi antavanta. Their phal has a beginning and an end. In other words, the outcome of all of these things he just described is material. None of them results in freedom from Maya, and none of them results in attaining God. In other words, the Bhagavatam is also doing ninda of the path of karma. So on one hand, our scriptures are saying, follow the path of karma. If you don't, you're doing vikarm, you're doing bad actions, you'll be punished, you can go to Narak. And you'll be rewarded if you do follow these good actions by going to Swarg. So follow the path of karma. And on the other hand, the same scriptures are saying, those who follow this path of karma are utterly foolish. They only get to go to Swarg at the most. All of the outcome of their actions is temporary. So all of that effort ends up being used up, and they start right back where they were in the beginning. So what's the use of that? So which of these statements is correct? We have Bhagwan himself taking both sides, saying you must follow the path of karma because it's my agya. I made the do's and don'ts of the Vedas. If you don't follow my agya, you're my enemy. And on the other hand, you have the very same Shri Krishna saying, if you follow that path of karma that I outlined in the Vedas, you're a fool's fool. So which of these statements is correct, and why are both sides being shown in our scriptures? I'll explain to you tomorrow when we go into more depth in understanding about the path of karma. Boliye Vrindavan Bihari Lal Ki Jai.